What you're about to listen to is a very early recording of the 4F Film Review Podcast featuring myself, Shay, and my good friend, Eric. This episode was recorded before we had hosting, chemistry, on-mic skills, or even a proper name for the podcast. Please keep all of these things in mind and try to excuse any audio or flow issues that may occur as a result of listening to two bozos talk about movies and cut their teeth in the realm of podcast production. I guarantee you that it will at least be more entertaining than all of those podcasts hosted by celebrities that are neither funny nor interesting. Enjoy. Eric and Shay Watch Movies, Episode 8. I'm Shay.
I'm Eric.
We watched a movie this week.
It was a movie.
It was definitely a movie. I think that this is the first movie that we've watched that makes me wish that we didn't advise our audience to watch along with us prior to listening to the forthcoming week's episode.
Yeah, because they're, well, on the plus side, for anybody who did not do it, they didn't miss anything.
That's true. They missed 2 hours and 9 minutes of absolutely nothing. And no, we are not talking about The Scorpion King, which we briefly teased that we would be watching. But then I went in and I made a little audio edit and I said, no, we are not watching The Scorpion King because that is the sequel to another sequel called The Mummy Returns, which is what we actually watched.
Yeah, we wanted to, since we're into an arc of pro wrestling character or pro wrestling pro wrestlers as actors, I wanted to go to the genesis of The Rock as a force in Hollywood, and that is with The Mummy Returns. But unfortunately, The Rock isn't very much in it.
No, he's barely in it at all. He's in the very opening sequence, and he's in the, spoiler alert, the what?
I'm just noticing our levels are, my levels are way low.
Oh, they are way low.
And yours are.
Mine are way high.
Yeah, way high.
We're keeping all this in.
Yeah, okay.
Well, if you talk, try talking now.
Yeah.
No, I'll cut this.
Okay.
There we go.
There we are.
That'll work. Okay. All right. Back to our discussion, which you totally maybe heard some of that. Pro wrestlers in movies. The Rock was barely in this movie. He was in the very opening sequence, and then he was in the end kind of as like a CGI PlayStation 1 version of himself as a giant scorpion.
Yeah, like a Minotaur scorpion thing.
Yes.
That looked horrible.
What are your favorite Rock movie roles?
Mm.
I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
not Red One. We can rule
that
out.
All of them are from Fast and the Furious, I think.
That's not a high bar to clear, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not very into the whole Rock oeuvre. You know, he's a force in the movie industry, but, you know, I mean, part of the reason why I think we started this podcast is because neither of us see many movies, certainly the last 10 years, and kind of have a distaste for a lot of modern films. And The Rock is a big modern film star. Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned that we haven't seen many movies, because what movie did I say, Eric, that this movie takes a number of cues from that I have not seen?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Well, that would be Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes,
I have not seen, well, or any of them, I've seen Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and that's when I was like, oh, I don't think I like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I heard that, I was told yesterday that that's a good movie. Is this
what?
Yes.
Who are you talking to?
My brother-in-law, who is a mark for Indiana Jones.
Dude, your sister's got to get out of that relationship.
There's already a kid there. It'd be a little complicated.
You don't think that it's worth breaking up the marriage over Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Because I would say that that is a red flag, sir.
I mean, he is my brother-in-law, bless his heart. He has strong nostalgia for certain things, and he will disregard obvious badness.
Is he listening to this right now, or can we really
not yet, but I will definitely tell him about it in the future.
Great. We called him out on this very show. Mm-hmm. If he makes it to episode 8, as many of our listeners have, we can talk about it. I think it is funny to be recording all these episodes. I think I mentioned this on the last show, but we're recording like basically episode 3 through 8 so far, at least without any audience feedback whatsoever, mm-hmm. which it's fun to fly by the seat of your pants. And I was thinking, I had this idea earlier today. Wouldn't it be funny? Like, you know how a lot of podcasts, like, go on iTunes and review the show and give us 5 stars and let us know what you think, but only if it's 5 stars. Wouldn't it be good to like ask for only 1-star reviews? Say, like, listen, if you're listening to this show, we want the worst reviews possible.
I don't think that's a good strategy because of algorithms and stuff like that. Because we could be a cult classic. I don't think that that's what people would be thinking they're finding if they see something that says it's 1-star.
Let's see. 1-star reviewed podcast, the worst reviewed podcast of all time that is constantly making offensive jokes that swear their tongues are planted in their cheeks when they say them.
No, sorry. Okay. I'm not buying into your market dynamic.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, maybe we don't take ourselves as seriously as this stupid movie does.
Oh, gosh.
But that doesn't mean that we're not trying our best to put out something that's listenable.
Well, see, I do think that there's a problem, though. This movie did take itself.
That is the problem. It takes itself way too seriously for what it is, which is a dumb, brainless, breathless action movie that is so concerned with the moment-to-moment audience becoming disengaged that they refuse to take a moment and do any sort of character development whatsoever.
There's like so many problems with this film. There's like the main cast is you got Brandon Fraser and Rachel Weisz, who Rachel Weisz becomes a better actress in the future, but she's kind of early on and she's just has a hollow character here.
I mean,
and
she's putting in the work. She's like, it's a workman-like performance for her. It's not.
Yeah, but a workman-like performance, but her character is basically just like fawning over her husband and, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, she's got nothing to work with, so she's just like doing the best she can
It's unfortunate. Yeah. But, you know. There's a poor cast that has very little charisma or chemistry, and the characters don't go anywhere, and of course death knell to every movie. We've got heavy amounts of child actor going
on.
Not
necessarily fair.
I'm sorry, it was not.
I mean, he's not good. What was the kid's name? Do you know the kid's name?
I don't recall. It's nothing against any child actor who's being put in a position that they shouldn't be put in. You know, they shouldn't be in a position where they're having to carry scenes
in a movie that is very much populated by a lot of experienced adult actors. The kids should not be a major plot device and carrying scenes, like you say. Like, this is not Harry Potter, okay, where the point is that they're kids and you can find good actors, or, you know, as good as kid actors get, really.
Right.
This kid is not a good actor and he's being asked to do some heavy lifting.
No. And it's unfortunate. And there's so many like tropes as well. The one thing we discussed a little bit early on in the film was that this film came out in 2001, in summer of 2001, which was before a kind of auspicious date that happened also in 2001.
Yeah, the release of Fast and the Furious.
Yes, indeed. And some other things that happened in the world. And as a consequence, I feel like the role of Arabic people were presented very differently than they would have, like, even a year later. Like, there was much more of like this Arab mysticism and stuff like that, and they're kind of a mysterious and, for lack of a better phrase, backwards people. or something like that. They're tribal.
It kind of reminds you of how they often present like Eastern cultures, like, you know, in the Far East, with the mysticism, as you say specifically. Like, yeah, there's a lot of like magical, and also, you know, equating the Middle East to, you know, Egypt and Africa, where a lot of this movie was shot, which is not the same thing. But,
no,
you know, that's just... That's par for the course for Hollywood at the time, I suppose. Just like get as many tropes and stereotypes into the thing as you can and just try not to make it offensive, but still make it tropey.
Yeah, yeah. You got to feel like you're hitting the buttons to get the responses.
I didn't feel like it was offensive, but it was like, it was just so.
It was riding the line.
But
definitely.
But I've seen worse as far as that stuff.
Yes, definitely. But. Yeah, there was, but yeah, I thought it was interesting in that sense, because that was part of what did remind me of Indiana Jones as well, was that the way that they presented the natives was much more, there's a sense of mysticism, primitive or whatever, however you'd want to characterize that, versus how you would have Arabic peoples being portrayed, you know, in the near future, where they're all cunning and deceptive and out to, you know, do something nefarious.
Sure. And you probably have a better sense of what, you know, what that particular culture was viewed as at the time, as opposed to me, because I was the age of that kid in the movie. I didn't have any sense of any
exactly
of this
stuff. Yeah, there is a definite difference that I picked up in that, like, right away. Like even there's other films like from earlier in the 90s that I can think of just offhand that would have been a little bit more in that mode of presentation than, you know, after 2001, where, you know, every Arab is, you know, terrorist.
It was
basically
a lot more charged after that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to move off this topic because we're rapidly losing all of our listeners who keep politics out of it. Keep your politics out of my entertainment podcasts. And I want to talk about the CG. Because I feel like you cannot talk about this movie without talking about the CG. And I don't know if this is the case of the first movie, which we have not watched, by the way. We've not seen the original The Mummy.
No. I mean, I can't imagine that any of it was any better. But yeah, it was...
I mean, there were moments where it was like, okay, it's clear you're doing some tricks and it doesn't look too bad because it's kind of obscured by the editing and all that stuff. But there were some moments where you just get some dead-on 2001 CG, and it is rough, even for the time. Like, you can look at, I mentioned Harry Potter earlier, you can look at one of the early Harry Potter movies and be somewhat impressed with what they're doing with the CG. And this is not... When you see The Rock running around as a giant scorpion minotaur thing at the end of the movie... That is one of the roughest CG sequences I think I've ever seen in any movie.
It's so bad. And there's CG that from this relative era that is able to be convincing. And sometimes there were other things that you could combine with it.
Yeah, those
like,
little tricks.
I was specifically thinking before we watched this of Starship Troopers, because that had some convincing looking CG, and I thought that one of the things that helped it in being able to represent that was, since you had the antagonist was a bug army where they're all, you know, identical creatures, you know, having that represented is not going to look as clunky. But in this case, you had elements of that where there were enemies of all CGI created stuff, and it did not look nearly as good. And this was 3 years later in terms of production.
It didn't seem like there were any sort of practical effects that were like helping it along either. You know what
right.
I mean? Like sometimes you'll combine the two. That's where
I thought
you were going.
Part of why I mentioned some combining of effects, because I know that that for sure did go on in Starship Troopers, but there were a lot of larger scale fight sequences that are like from a distance and where it's all CG type stuff, and not some close-ups or whatever where they could use some different things. So yeah, it's interesting in this era of how much the CG could be hit or miss, and it wasn't a clear progression in terms of how good it was.
It almost felt like they were so obsessed with this idea that they're like, we can do an entire movie of CG, basically, and just accent it with human actors and just tell the most bare-bones story. It's almost like a proof of concept for computer graphical design itself, where you look at this movie and almost everything you see is computer-generated, and almost everything looks incredibly dated as a result of that. Does that sound right to you? That maybe that was sort of the angle?
I do think that there definitely was, I mean, like, that was the era of the first, the new Star or the Star Wars prequels being made, which...
The first one had already come out, right? But the second one was not out yet?
Yeah, that's correct.
Attack of the Clones was the second one?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. I think that came out the next summer.
Okay.
But this was in that era where they started to rely heavily on CG, and they thought this could solve all sorts of problems, and you can just paper over everything with it, and yeah, that doesn't work.
I mean, they did a big, giant, dumb blockbuster movie that sure had a lot of computer effects in it. It sure cost a lot of money, $95 million. It sure made a lot of money, like $400 million or whatever it was.
Yeah, but like 30.
But as we were watching this, you know, we're doing the 21st century thing, and we're Googling facts about the movie, and I found the Wikipedia page for The Mummy Returns to be severely lacking in content. There's not much of a Wikipedia entry for this movie because it seems like nobody cares. It's just completely forgotten to the sands of time, as it were.
This film does not have or this franchise. This was a billion-dollar film franchise, and it has no cultural footprint at all.
It is the most throwaway you can possibly make a movie, right? It is the most disposable. It is a disposable camera of a movie. You watch the thing, and then you take it to get the this is not a great metaphor.
Yeah, you don't. Well, you, I'll come do up you with know what one. That is?
No, I know what
taking
a disposable
things to get.
Developed. Yeah, I took film to get developed.
Oh wow, I'm amazed.
I'm young. I'm not that young. The kids still call me old.
Well,
the point is that's not a good metaphor anyway. So we need to come up with a better one. But while we're doing that, we can talk more about how this film is bad. And I feel like we've only touched on just the surface of how bad this movie is. But it's hard to know where to begin. We were talking about whether or not it was the worst movie we've watched so far for the show. And I said, I don't think so, because I really hated Armageddon.
I can understand if you said Armageddon is worse than this, but...
At least Armageddon had, like, a presence.
Right.
On
that's
some
what
level.
I said to you was, like, that there was something there, at least, to latch onto, even if it was bad. There was a clear linear progression through the awful and the unending awful that was Armageddon. But this was just like, oh, God, this is bad. How much longer does this have to go? And, like, there's nothing, there's no hook. You're not on to anything. I don't care about Brendan Fraser. I don't really care about his wife, who is just there to be attractive and be way too horny for Brendan Fraser.
There is no level of horniness for Brendan Fraser that is appropriate, but her levels were just cranked up to the maximum.
Well, I think there is...
He is not that attractive or interesting of a human being, and he doesn't have a character in the movie either, so there's no sort of inkling to you as an audience is like, what has this guy done?
I do think that there is something to be said for marketing to, you know, Joe Everyman and just trying to be like, it doesn't matter how mediocre you are, you can imagine yourself as an unstoppable action hero who never is threatened at all by any action sequence through the film, and that you still are able to get a very attractive woman who is just going to be horny for you nonstop. This is you know, just mediocre male wish fulfillment.
I mean, you know, maybe this movie is more timeless than I thought.
I mean, if it would get, I mean, hey, they were able to get $400 million worth of revenue out of this, you know, and the one before as well.
How many times can like 500 dudes see the same movie? You know what I mean? Like people
maybe
saw
a million times.
QJ, I texted you. My wife just came downstairs. QJ, did you and your sister see any of the Mummy movies when they came out in theaters? No. She says she was too small, which is true because she would have been like 8 or 9 as I was. But your sisters didn't see the movie. They weren't. Did they like The Rock? Okay. Our friend Brittany had a big crush on The Rock. Maybe I'll ask her about it. Let's see if I can get her to respond during the show. This is the most interesting topic of conversation I can come up with around this movie. Like who saw this? Who remembers this at all?
Yeah, I don't. The question of who this movie is for, I really don't know. I think it's for some executives at Universal or whatever, because they wanted to remake The Mummy. Oh, we're going to remake some IP and make, you know, pay some dude to write and direct a film around it.
I forgot that ostensibly The Mummy in 98, yeah, The Mummy was supposed to be a remake.
This is not Boris Karloff.
No, I mean, no. None of the people in this film have any of that, anywhere close to that level of charisma. And I would argue less charisma than the 1919 silent picture, The Cabinets of Dr. Caligari. Like, they didn't even have as much character as those people did.
I mean, everybody was ready for that reference. So.
I was ready. I'm always ready to reference The Cabinets of Dr. Caligari. It's better than this movie. Actually, it's a great movie.
I can agree with that on sight unseen.
Okay. We're watching that next week. No, we're not. We're watching another movie with another wrestler.
We are watching another movie with another wrestler.
Should we reveal that now since we're on the topic?
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, kind of one of the best wrestlers ever. One of the largest personalities, certainly, in wrestling. Andre the Giant in The Princess Bride.
I was wondering if you were going to say the name of the movie or if you were just going to say that it's a movie with Andre the Giant in it.
Right.
What else?
Well, I don't think Andre was in anything else.
Surely he had to be in something.
No, because he had health issues, so he was pretty limited in the late 80s.
But he's such a larger-than-life guy. Like, you think when he wasn't working for the WWF or WWF that, like, you know, he would be allowed to explore that sort of territory.
Oh, yeah, but
I'm talking about the 70s, not the 80s.
Yeah, well, in the 70s, it was a thing of, I don't think that professional wrestling had enough mainstream popularity. You had to get into WrestleMania. After post-WrestleMania was when wrestling had enough cultural purchase.
So even being a name like Andre the Giant and being a known character in that sort of scene, that was not enough to get him.
Because there wasn't national television yet.
Sure.
So Andre the Giant meant something in Canada, in the Northeast, and down in Florida, maybe in the Carolinas a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, Andre was not a presence everywhere, and neither was anybody else until a few years later, and some dude named Hulk.
Never heard of him. At any rate, next week, yes, we are watching The Princess Bride, a great movie. We'll spoil that for you now.
Yeah, we're gonna actually like another movie.
I know, it's hard to believe that we're doing a show where all we do is watch bad movies, but that, for the most part, it seems like that's what it's been so far. Well, maybe that's not true. We watched Jaws.
It's not our quest to see bad movies, but we do like trashing on bad movies.
I will say this. It's kind of unbelievable that we went from a movie like They Live to The Mummy Returns. Like, you go from an ultimate cult classic. Like, They Live is the ultimate cult classic movie.
To
this, which is the opposite of a cult classic, which made it so much money and nobody can tell me a damn thing about it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yes. when you look at the budgets and the box offices and stuff like that, and the amount of cultural purchase and references that are from a movie like They Live.
I came here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum. Is already that this movie made 40 times the amount of money that They Live did.
Yeah, if not even more. But it's nothing.
It's nothing at all.
Like sands just disappearing.
It's slipping through your fingers.
Into dust and, you know, other bad effects.
I thought the when the guy who played Imhotep, whose name I don't know and I don't care, because he was completely forgettable too. I thought when he was in his mummy form, I thought that looked all right. I want to say one thing about this movie that I liked. I thought the mummies looked all right.
Yeah. What little mummies we got, they were okay.
So I guess we'll leave it there. I don't see any reason to prolong this. Brittany hasn't responded, so apparently, you know, I'll tell you next week whether she remembers anything about The Mummy Returns.
Let's not say no, we did.
I mean,
because we'll presume that nobody remembers anything from The Mummy.
I'm going to give you an assignment for next week, okay? And I want to start doing this because I have a notoriously terrible memory, and you know this about me.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to make a little 5-question quiz about The Mummy Returns, and I want you to quiz me on it at the beginning of next week's show before we get into the next.
Oh my
film.
Gosh, that's. That's some content right there.
That's going to be great content. I know we're famously formless on this show, but I also want to introduce some somewhat recurring segments.
The only thing that's unfortunate about this is that this is going to force me to recall anything from this movie at all, and to be able to formulate some questions about it.
Well, okay, how about, like, what is the, you know, what is the name of the
anybody.
Brendan Fraser's wife?
I'm
already in trouble.
Yeah, I know.
Main character, don't know her name.
But yeah, she didn't really have one. I don't.
She used to be in Egyptian in a previous life.
Right.
That's what we know.
Right. Yeah.
She and Marta from Arrested Development.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was the best thing out of this film, was that we discovered that Marta had a film role.
Would you say that the decision to watch this movie was a huge mistake? He's nodding. This is an audio form, but that works.